Dose response for high-risk patients suggests that a significant percentage of these patients' disease still may be localized, warranting aggressive local therapy, be it radiation or surgery. It's unclear whether androgen deprivation is essential for high-risk patients receiving high-dose ERT. If they have low-volume, high-grade disease, do we need to give them the prolonged hormonal therapy, or an aggressive course of local therapy would be sufficient? Shorter courses may probably have less benefit. We don't know. Longer courses may be more beneficial, but on the other hand, impair quality of life. And the role of systemic regimens with RT, with or without hormonal therapy, would be needed to assess in phase 3 trials. With IMRT conformal treatments right now, we have seen a slight increase in urinary side effects with the higher dose, chronic obstructive symptoms, but not that significant. And the rectal bleeding rates have been relatively low, 3%, despite application of as high as 86 gray. So I don't think, as far as the high-dose RT, that makes a tremendous amount of difference. As far as quality of life, we're looking at that now, but at least looking at the toxicity profiles is not that dramatic.
Lynn, what are you observing yourself in these patients?
The thing that we're starting to really see is that patients are becoming overly fixated on long-term hormonal therapy, and a lot of people are actually wanting to avoid hormone therapy over a long period of time. So there may be more interest in some patients of alternative approaches, either, you know, with high-risk disease, they can do A or B, and they may choose one or the other if they perceive that perhaps the side effect or the quality of life profile may be different. So I think it's going to be very important for what Mike is doing to document the quality of life issues between the two techniques. And if at the end of the day, the outcomes are the same, patients may choose one over the other for a variety of personal reasons.
Just curious, with your involvement in the RTOG, do you think that the setting is there for initiating trials without hormonal therapy in these high-risk patients and looking at systemic therapy plus RT without it?
I think you know your colleagues a little bit better than I do, but you have people firmly ensconced in different camps, and I know that there are people who are very interested in dose escalation and other people who say in that group, we have 3, 4, 5, 6 trials, as you've shown, that show an improvement in either PSA progression or survival. So why should we even worry about that? So we'll see how much that gets play right now. But I think you're going to find most people, or at least in what I observe with radiation oncologists, are very comfortable with the prospective trials that have been done using the hormone therapy and are a little bit resistant to start to really seriously look at dose escalation, other than certain centers of excellence that have really made a commitment to it.
Tom?
I think that's one of the problems that we have. The data that's out there is robust, and we do know that 70 gray combined with hormonal therapy works far better than 70 gray alone. The concern is that you showed a couple of trials there where you're moving up to 78 gray with hormonal therapy, and we have no idea what the combination of the two are going to affect the patient in terms of toxicity. I mean, we know going up you get more toxicity. It's certainly possible that there may be a synergistic toxicity with radiation plus hormones, and that to me is the biggest worry that people have about this. You'd like to see these studies going higher, you'd like to see boost to the pelvis, but when you have hormonal therapy on board already, are we setting these patients up for a miserable outcome? Now, I accept the fact we don't know, and I accept the fact that the trials have to be done. But I think we need to be very careful that that study you showed had two arms, both of which were looking at a variety of durations of androgen deprivation therapy, but both of which were at the high dose radiation level. And I think if you're going to do those studies, you need to have your standard and compare that to your increased dose rather than bumping up both doses, because you could get a very nasty shock.
Howard, you raised the issue of what kinds of clinical trials should we be thinking about in this situation. What are your thoughts on that?
The question is, how many times do you want to ask the same question? You hear about the low-dose radiation therapy, and one could argue that the hormones are compensating for it. But the question is, how do you quantitate the benefit to a patient in terms of PSA relapse-free survival, ideally metastasis-free survival, and long-term survival? If someone says, what will this absolutely, in terms that I can understand, do for me, how is that quantitated in the discussion?
Dave, what are some of the trial designs or questions that are being discussed that you find the most interesting in this situation? What are some of the trials you'd like to see done?
Well, I kind of agree with Howard. I think we're comparing what some people call Pepsi and Coke here. We need to get beyond that and look at new innovation, putting something else with radiation, looking at earlier chemotherapy. And I think the other thing we really have to be concerned about is, I don't think there's any question that Mike and others have clearly shown that escalating the dose of radiation increases your response rate with minimal side effects. And I applaud them for that. What I am somewhat concerned about are what's going to happen to these people beyond that time, a decade later, because we know radiation therapy does have some long, late-term sequelae, whether that be bladder neck cancers, rectal, bladder complications, things like that. And I see these patients that were treated with lower doses of radiation a decade later. So I think that's something that needs to be factored in these trials too, long-term-wise.
Mike, what kind of follow-up do we have with high-dose radiation in terms of these questions?
We have data now past 10 years, at least for 75 gray of conformal radiotherapy, where the efforts were to restrict the volume of bladder and rectum within the field. We have not seen the hemorrhagic cystitis at 10 years at least. We've not seen any rectal strictures or the like 10 years out. But I agree, David. I think we still need to look 10 years and 15 years as we escalate these doses to just make sure that we're not running into problems. The risk of development of secondary cancers, you're correct, has been shown greater than the population. I think those need to be followed. Whether the escalation of the dose has anything to do with that or would increase that is unclear, but there's no question, and I think I agree with what has been said before, as we move into these uncharted trials of higher radiation doses, we need to look at these long-term toxicities.